glad to see so many of you all back now. It's time to begin our block of Python talks for the day. First up, we have Richard Jones, who is talking about the state of Python. Please make him welcome.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, so I've got kind of a meandering set of things that I'd like to, make sure that everybody's aware of and maybe bring some people up to speed with today. So hopefully I'll better get through it all and leave some time for questions. We'll see how we go. What I thought I'd start with is just a bit of a recap of history, because we've actually just passed a couple of milestones in Python land. Okay, so the first milestone really is that it's been 20 years since the development of Python actually started. The thoughts about Python, the kind of the research into it, started a couple of years before 89, but the actual development started 20 years ago last December. So that's pretty neat. And then, of course, there was the first public release through Usenet in 91, because, big bad World Wide Web wasn't quite there yet. 1.5.2, which I think we'll all be referring to as Ye Old Faithful, it's still around. It was only a number of years ago that Red Hat would still ship with 1.5.2. So, 1.5.2, then there was a bunch of other releases. 2.0 in 2000, and then around about the middle of 2006, some of these ideas about things that should maybe be fixed one day, maybe if we find some time in this mythical Python 3000, actually started to solidify. Guido officially created the Py3k branch in Subversion and told everyone to stay away. And the PEP was written pretty much at around the same time, outlining the vague sort of release plan and sort of some of the ideas about what might get done. And then we actually had 3.0 released in 2008, near the end of 2008. And then 3.1 very, very soon after, so roughly 6 months after, or 6 or 7 months after, in 2009. So what I might start with is kind of, a what's new in 3.1. But kind of to give some sort of context to that, I think I might give you an idea of what was actually kind of new in 3.0, because 3.1 is very close to 3.0, and 3.0 has really only been out for, a bit over a year. Or as some sections of the media and Slashdot reported, basically what destroyed the world. And I think we can all remember fondly those days when Google broke when 3.0 was released. It just stopped working. So 3.0 was the version in which we got to fix a bunch of niggling little things that had been bugging people about Python for quite a number of years. I guess a couple of the core syntax ones were that print and exec used to be part of the actual Python syntax. They were statements, and they had kind of weird syntax at that. And so they were just made functions, and that cleaned up a bunch of weird syntax and made things much more consistent, especially for beginners. Print's no longer this magical thing. It's just like other functions. The embracing of iterators continued. These methods were officially made to return iterators instead of lists, which is really nice, but it breaks code. So this is why it was done in 3.0. There's a lot of code that assumes, for example, that map returns a list, which is no longer the case in 3. So in 3.0, in 3.1, 3.0, text is Unicode. So you work with Unicode strings. And if you read data from a file or from a socket, you get bytes, and you have to worry about the translation between the two. And there's a bunch of new keywords. Exception chaining. Hands up, who knows what exception chaining is? Okay, so exception chaining is this really neat little feature, which basically says if you get an exception inside an exception handler, the new exception knows what the old exception was, and you can look it up. which is really nice for, you know, kind of top level exception handlers. And the standard library is way better organized in 3.0 and 3.1. So things like there's no urllib, urllib2, all the HTTP-ish sort of modules like the cookie lib and the simple server and all those things have moved into a HTTP package with a client and server module inside that changes. So all those modules that didn't actually conform to the standard Python style have been renamed. So config parser loses its camel case naming. And a bunch of other stuff. Again, not backwards. Style classes are gone. And new style classes are the way. So object, even if you don't say it. So if you say class and have brackets with nothing inside them, you're still going to inherit from object. You can just leave the object part out, makes it a bit terser than having to actually specify object every time. A bunch of built-in functions are still gone. So most of these were completely unnecessary, kind of holdovers from way, way back in like even 0.9 days. Raw input, the functionality of raw input, which is basically to accept a string from the user, has been moved into the input built-in. So input no longer evaluates the user's input, it just gives you a string. Callable is not necessary, you test for a double under call method. Coerce, nobody really ever knew what that did. Apply, completely unnecessary. Reduce is now in a module called functools. And so on. So there's a bunch of clean hacks is also gone now too. And string exceptions. Back in the bad old days, strings were the only things that you could raise in an exception. Now you raise objects and it's much nicer and string exceptions are gone. Okay, so that's 3.0. There's some of the stuff that was in 3.0 was also in 2.6. So I'll just quickly go over that stuff as well. So multiprocessing, which is basically JSON modules from 3.0 were backported. IO is kind of an abstraction of the common, in a module. It's also the core of the IO system in Python 3, but it's not the core in Python 2, but the kind of the interfaces and so forth are there for 2.6. And JSON, obviously, we all know what JSON is and its core, and that's, you know, available in the standard library. There's also this new themed TK toolkit has been put into 3 and 2.6, allowing you to just style TK programs using kind of style sheets, and it kind of looks like that, but yeah. the advanced string formatting, so the replacement for the C-style percent formatting is in 2.6 as well. The interfaces stuff, abstract base classes, that's in there as well, but function annotation is only in 3. But, you know, I don't care about that stuff, so. New literals for octal and binary. So it used to be that you could specify an octal literal with just a leading zero on a number, but there was some ambiguity about when octal numbers would actually be produced and when they wouldn't. Confused newbies and oldies alike, so there's now an actual octal syntax for specifying octal numbers. And binary numbers, yay. So you can actually, you know, take an integer, say bin, and it tells you what it looks like in binary, which is really cool. Yeah, I use it all the time, actually. I work for a telco, so we do bit string stuff all the time. Okay, and class decorators. So like function decorators, except you can decorate a class. So that's neat. Basically allows you to do stuff like So singleton, you could do it with a class decorator. And basically you decorate the class and it says, basically every time you decorate a class with that, all instances of the class will become, you know, singleton. So it's kind of neat. Anyway, so class decorators. Numbers and fractions. Well, fractions is actually pretty cool, unless you do like mathematics with fractions, which is neat. But they also provide kind of the abstract base classes for numeric types. So all the built-in int and float have an actual base class, an abstract base class in the numbers module. CMath is for doing complex math, or math with complex numbers. the SSL module. And the SSL module is neat because it's actually formed the core of kind of a re-implementation of the HTTPS and FTPS components of the standard library. And they're much neater and better because of it. There's a bunch of new toys that have been added to the math and func tools and so on. So in math, there's actual there's actual symbols in there for infinity, negative infinity, and not a number. And in fact, I think in 3 and maybe in 2.6, you can actually specify not a number as an argument to float, and it'll give you not a number back. Okay, func tools, as I said, reduce has been moved into func tools. It's in there in 2.6, but it's also used that to migrate. Iter tools has got a bunch of stuff in there like combinations, permutations, and Cartesian products of iterables and stuff like that. There's a contributor, Raymond Hedinger, who is well into statistics and stuff. And he's the contributor of most of these things. And collections, again, abstract-based class stuff for dictionaries or mappings and mutable mappings and all sorts of other fun stuff like that. But there's also named tuple, which is kind of a nice thing where you can specify names for the elements of tuples, so you can then refer to them by attribute name later on, which is kind of neat. And that's actually used in 3. I'm not sure whether it's used in 2 so much, but it's used in 3 for things like the return value from some of the time functions. So you can actually refer to dot day, dot month, and so on, instead of referring to, you know, tuple indices. Okay, so actual 3.1, there's actually not that much new in 3.1, and I'll get to that why in a moment. But there is this neat thing, which is Python can actually execute packages and zip files, because zip files that look like packages. So they actually looks for a module inside the package called double under main and executes that if you just say Python package name, Python minus M package name. So that's neat. Makes packaging up applications a lot easier. There's some enhancements to unit tests. The most notable one is you can decorate tests, say, don't do this test on Windows. Don't do this test if this rather complex condition is true. So, you know, versions of libraries and so on. Named tuple, that's just an example in 3.1's version info is a named tuple. So you can actually refer to the attributes of the tuple by name, which is, yeah, kind of nice. Oh, and there was this whole thing about pickling. 3.1 and 2.7 now, so these are actually things that have been backported to 2. Get the representation of 1.1, you get the horrible thing. In 3.1 and 2.7, you get the nice thing, which is basically this algorithm that figures out what the shortest consistent representation is of a floating point number. It still doesn't make that work. Okay, so that'll always be wrong, unless you use the decimal module, in which case it will work. Okay, so another thing in 3.1 is the IO and JSON modules were re-implemented in C, making them way, way, way faster. And that was... the IO module rewrite was actually one of the big motivators of releasing 3.1 early, because it was just so goddamn slow. Memory view is really neat. It's basically a byte array which is mutable, but it's called memory view for some reason. Yeah. But it's really neat. So you can read bytes from a file and they can actually be mutable. So that's neat. And there's a standard ordered dictionary in the collections module as well. The other big point with 3.1 is less bugs. Lots and lots and lots of bugs fixed in 3.1. But it still breaks all your code. So all those things that break, that were broken with backwards compatibility in 3.0, are still very much true in 3.1. But of course, I'll get to it in a bit, but and we've found that, you know, it's obviously not necessarily the case. And I'll get to some of the migration stuff, hopefully, in a bit. Okay, so since 3.1 since 3.0 was released, we actually had a few books come out. In fact, the second one there, the first edition of that was released before 3.0 came out. And so now there's been a second edition of it. These two are free books, so you can actually download them, or you can get Dead Tree versions. And so's this one. And again, second edition. So I love that, you know, we've got the same thing with Mark Pilgrim, who's released numerous versions of his editions of his books, are all downloadable for free. This guy's written this really nice book. It's kind of aimed at 10 to 12 year olds to basically teach them how to write games and how to program, and it's, you know, really well written for that audience. And it's, you know, as I say, free, or you can buy it in actual paper. So those are all Python 3 based books. Some other books that came out in 2009, so there was Iron Python in Action, which was a big release. It was quite popular on all the ranking sites for some time. Obviously about, you know, Iron Python, the .NET implementation of Python. A couple of other ones. How to Think Like a Computer Scientist actually has had some good press, but I haven't actually seen it myself.
It's good.
And Grey Hat Python I hadn't heard of until I did some searching. But, yeah, it's described as being for hackers and reverse engineers. It teaches you how to do things like debuggers and trojans and fuzzers. Who knows what a fuzzer is? Okay, can you just... somebody... oh, okay, cool. Okay, so it's fuzzers. Emulators and code and library injection, all sorts of fun things. And then the other one, again, at a much younger audience, and possibly less hackish audience, the Hello World. That's by basically father and son team. Carter was 10, I think, when the book was started. Oh, the grey hat one. The Grey Hat book download has this warning, basically, which I thought was funny. Anyway. So, 2.7, which is expected this year. There's an alpha out right now. Includes, as I've kind of mentioned, there's backporting from 3.1, so some of those features. And kind of the point of 2.7 is to kind of move things along to make it easier and easier and easier to be able to switch over to 3. So we're now at a point where basically the only differences between 2.7 and 3.1 are some syntactical changes that you can turn on with from future import some name. You can actually turn them on in 2.7. So you can turn on print being a function just with an import at the top of your file. You can turn on a few of those other things, you know, just with an import, which basically makes the porting really, really simple. 2.7 is going to be the last 2.x releases. Not counting bug fix releases for 2.7, it's going to be the last major release in the 2.7, or the 2.x line. We also saw a release of Iron Python last year. Again, that's the version of Python that runs on the .NET CLR, or on the free version of the CLR called Mono. And in fact, I've had it running on my OS X laptop just fine. So we had 2.6 released in December, which basically brings Iron Python up to CPython, the main version, version 2.6. So it's compatible at that level. They've had a discussion about whether or not they'll be doing Python 3 compatibility next or something else, and it turns out they'll be doing the something else first because it's a much higher priority for that particular implementation to focus on integration with Visual Studio, because that is basically their audience, people who use Visual Studio. So they'll be doing that before Python 3. And they've got a time frame of maybe 2 years for Python 3. Jython had a release last year as well. So Jython is Python compiled to the Java virtual machine, and they released 2.5.1 They don't have quite the same number of engineers behind it, so they move at a slightly slower pace than IronPython. And they're hoping to target CPython 2.7 for their next release. So their 2.5 release already supports some of the features of 2.6, so they've got class decorators already. And the way that they see it targeting 2.7 is basically they're implementing a bunch of features they'd have to implement for 3.1 anyway. So they're kind of just incrementally moving along that upgrade path rather than going straight to 3. One of the other points to make, I guess, is that both IronPython and Jython are both helped in the migration to 3 by the fact that they're already built on a Unicode system. They've had to do workarounds, basically, to implement the 8-bit strings in the old version of Python. So they'll just be able to get rid of that, and that'll be nice. Excuse me. And then there's PyPy, but Mike Hudson is going to be talking about that after me. So I won't talk about that. Okay, so in terms of migration to Python 3, there's been some slow progress. It was always expected that progress would be slow and measured. There was never going to be any expectation that people would suddenly jump on board. So there's some big name projects that have done some work, some that are thinking about doing some work, some that haven't even thought about it yet. So SQL Alchemy and some of the database layers, so Postgres database layer, but not MySQL, they're kind of thinking about it. Interestingly enough, on the Postgres side, PL Python in Postgres itself supports both 2 and 3. So yes, SQL Alchemy. Distribute, which is the kind of the fork of setup tools, which is actually going somewhere. It's available for Python 3 now. The Pygame Reloaded project supports 2 and 3. Django was mostly ported at the sprints at PyCon last year, but there's still a bunch of work to do there. And to give you an idea of, you know, where some of the other projects are, NumPy is, they have a plan for migrating to Python 3, but they don't have the manpower yet. NumPy is a whole lot of C code, so they actually have a fair amount of work to do, but I'll get back to that in a little bit. In terms of resources to migrating to Python 3, in part to the porting mailing list where you can sign up to get help. If you're doing migration of a pure Python project, typically you won't need to go anywhere near this stuff because porting of a pure Python project is just easy. There's really nothing complex about it at all. It's usually only people who have C code base that they need to port over where it starts getting a bit fun. And there's this really cool project on Google Code, which is one guy's effort to... He lists about a couple of dozen different kind of incompatibility or compatibility breaks between 2 and 3, and then gives sample code in 2.5, 2.6, and 3.1 for each case, and well-documented exactly what's going on. So the 2.6 version is compatible with both versions of Python. And so you can kind of get, you know, for each case, you can see a good sample of how to maybe approach it in your own code. But again, it really only gets complex if you're going to try and support both versions. Sometimes you want to do that, sometimes you don't. In terms of the actual numbers, this is a straight graph of projects on the Python package index that have explicitly said in their Trove metadata, they've said Python 3. Or 3.1 or 3.0 or something like that. So it's not a huge number, but then it's kind of a fuzzy way of figuring things out because the Trove identifiers aren't always used. Yes. At the moment, I was going to... I think it's 4,500? Yeah. It's way less than 1%. But again, Trove identifiers aren't necessarily always used, blah, blah, blah. But it's still... it was never the intention that everyone would suddenly jump. So, yeah. Getting back to the C thing, there's this really neat project called 2to3C. So 2to3.py was a script that was written back when 3 was released, to basically automate switching over a bunch of stuff in your Python code. 2.3c uses this really cool semantic parsery thingy to try to automatically turn your C code from 2 to 3. And, you know, really neat. And it does a bunch of that. So that's really nice if you've got a large, you know, C code base that you need to migrate over. 3.2 is another project which allows you to take to start developing Python 3 and automatically migrate your code back to 2 to have a Python 2 release. So that's pretty neat. Okay. And I guess one of the big things to come out, one of several big things to come out near the end of last year was the declaration of a moratorium on changes to the language. Basically, there will be no changes to the syntax or built-in functions unless there's something wrong with the syntax in terms of its definition, but there'll be no actual changes to the syntax for, well, at least 2 years. It's basically for the lifespan of the 3.2 release cycle. So 3.3 will be the first version of Python that will allow actual changes to the language again. So this basically allows things to kind of slow down for a bit. So, you know, the language, you know, changing. And this is a chance to let things slow down so people can actually get used to some of the changes that were introduced in Python 3. To actually see whether they were worth it, to see whether they work. Let the community actually catch up and try things out. But also allow the alternative implementations like IronPython and Jython and PyPy perhaps to catch up to the Python 3, you know, implementation. So 2 years is, you know, a reasonable amount of time for that to happen. It's certainly not been declared because Guido or anywhere else thinks that Python is done. I'm particularly miffed about it, actually, because there was a particular change that was due to be released in 3.2. It just missed the cutoff for 3.1, which would allow generators to yield multiple levels back up the stack. And it was this close to making it into 3.1. But they said, nah, well, it's not going to make the cut. We'll release it in 3.2. And then, like, 2 months later, Guido says, nope. Anyway, so that would have been really nice, but I have to wait a few years for that. Okay, so another thing that's come out recently is some efforts to speed up Python 3. So obviously, without any actual changes to the core syntax, people are going to be focusing on libraries and performance. And maybe fixing bugs, but yeah. So, there's two projects, basically, that are of interest here. The first one is Unlaid and Swallow, which is a Google project to move the Python over to using the LLVM and doing a bunch of optimization, basically speeding things up. And it's been announced that, well, it hasn't happened yet, but Guido has said that he'd be perfectly happy for this project to merge with the CPython project. So Unlaid and Swallow would effectively just be merged into the Python 3 code. It wouldn't be merged into Python 2 unless somebody got really enthusiastic about it, and I doubt that's going to happen. So, and the other big thing that's going to Python 3.2 is a more rational global interpreter lock. Who doesn't know what the global interpreter lock is? Okie dokie. So it's not an unusual thing in Python, and I believe in Ruby as well. There's a in order to stop threaded programs from trouncing all over the interpreter's state while they're, you know, switching contexts, there is a lock on the interpreter's state. And so you can basically only have one thread running in the interpreter at a time. And that's the global interpreter lock. The problem is that in the current implementation of the GIL in Python, things go really pear-shaped if you have a multi-core system. In fact, if you have two high-demand, high-CPU threads running on a single core then they'll just run and run in approximately the same amount of time as it would just take to run them sequentially. When you run them on a multi-core system, for some reason, they end up, the time just blows out. And not only that, but other processors on the system suffer as well. There's just this massive resource starvation that happens. So, that being a bad thing, a smart cookie, I've neglected to put his standard library in. So, the standard library would probably want to be in the same place, I guess.
So, I just came in really late, but have you looked at ZC build-out?
Oh, God, have I. Okay, that fulfills a slightly different purpose. Yeah, this isn't so much for deployment as just work, you know, setting up an environment. You can quite